Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing a reading from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 13. Today's text is 49. Angri Mastakam Apurnas Tulasi Nava Dhamabihi Komalai Sarva Gatreshu Bhuri Punyavad Arpitai Angri Mastakama Purnas Tulasi Navadama Bihi Komalai Sarvagatreshu Puri Punyavad Arpitai Angri Mastakama Purnas Tulasi Navadama Bihi Komalai Sarvagatreshu Bhuri Punyavad Arpitai Angri Mastakam Apurnas Tulasi Navadama Bihi Komalai Sarvagatreshu Bhuri Punyavad Arpitai. Please chant. Komalai Sarvagatreshu Puri Punyavad Arpitai Angri Mastakama Purnas Sarvagatreshu Puri Punyavad Arpitai Vaishnavins Angri Mastakapa Purnas Rasina Anagi Komalai Sarvagatreshu Puri Punyavad Arpitai Angri Mastakama Purnas Tulasi Navadhama Bihi Komalai Sarvagatreshu Puri Punyavad Arpitai Angri Mastakama Purnas Tulasi Navadhama Bihi Komalai Sarvagatreshu Angri Mastakam Apurnas Komalai Sarvagatreshu Okay, synonyms. Aangrimastakam. Go up one page. Okay, we'll say that again. Aangrimastakam. From the feet up to the top of the head. Apurnaha. Fully decorated. Tulasi Navadamabihi. With garlands of fresh tulasi leaves. Komalai. Tender, soft. Sarvagatreshu. On all the limbs of the body. Bhuri Punyavat Arpitai. Which were offered by devotees. Engage in the greatest pious activity, worshipping the Supreme Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Every part of their bodies, from their feet to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulasi leaves offered by devotees engaged in worshipping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely hearing and chanting. Please repeat. Every part of their bodies, from their feet to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves offered by devotees engaged in worshiping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely hearing and chanting. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word Bhuri Punyavad Arpitai is significant in this verse. These forms of Vishnu were worshipped by those who had performed pious activities, Sukriti Bihi, for many births and who were constantly engaged in devotional service, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnoho. 7th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 23. Bhakti, devotional service, is the engagement of those who have performed highly developed pious activities. The accumulation of pious activities has already been mentioned elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam. 10th Canto, Chapter 12, Text 11, where Shukadeva Goswami says, Itang satang brahma sukhanu bhutya dasyang gatanang paradaivatena mayashitanam naradharakena sakam vijahruk krita punya punjaha. Which translates as, those who are engaged in self-realization, appreciating the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, and those engaged in devotional service, accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Master, as well as those who are under the clutches of Maya, thinking the Lord an ordinary person, cannot understand that certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship as cowherd boys. End of that translation. Now, Prabhupada says, in our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, there is a tamal tree that covers an entire corner of the courtyard. Before there was a temple, the tree was lying neglected, but now it has developed very luxuriantly, covering the whole corner of the courtyard. This is a sign of Puri Punya. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminita Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavani Prashchachadeshtarine Om Agyana Tamirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtang Stapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savabhutam Sajivam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishal Kanvatam Sham. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopay Sigopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha kalpa turubhyascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanang pavanebhyo vaisnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, who's speaking here? Shukadeva Goswami. And he's describing how the expanded apparent coward boys and calves, Krishna had expanded them after Brahma stole the originals, or not exactly the originals as it was explained, they were actually replacement originals, very complicated story. But now they've all transformed into Vishnu Murti, Vishnu form. So Shukadeva is describing the scene. And just as we do when we meet somebody, consciously or unconsciously, we look at them from top to bottom, isn't it? From head to toe. And we, again, consciously or unconsciously, we make notes of what they're wearing, their demeanor. We just naturally do that. Sometimes things seem incongruous. Somebody's wearing a very nice suit and tie, but sneakers. It doesn't seem to match, right? Actually, they say that this trend started in New York when there was a power outage back in the late 60s. And because New Yorkers tend to walk long distances if the train is dead, which happened when the power went out, the trains were dead. So they had to walk long distances to get to work or school or whatever. So they would dress up nicely, their nice business suit for the women or men, and then they would put on sneakers because they had to walk 10, 15, 20 blocks to get to work. And it kind of stuck after that. People started doing that. Just, you know, you dress nicely and you wear sneakers. So anyway, so the Vishnumurti, they're not wearing sneakers. They're, as it was pointed out, they look just like our giant Vijaya, except for the two added items that Lord Vishnu has that distinguishes him from the other residents of Vaikuntha, which are, what's one of them? The two items. Kastuba money, yes, the Kastuba gem. And the second one, the Shrivats, the mark of Shrivats, which is located where? Upper right side of the chest. And it's actually golden hair. So these are the two things that distinguishes the Vishnumurti from the ordinary, you could say, residents of Vaikuntha, who look just like these two Prabhus here, Jaya and Vijaya. And they're very attractive. We see many times people come to the temple and they pay more attention to Jaya and Vijaya than they do to Rukmini Dorkadis. They come and they put offerings there, they bow down and touch their heads because they're obviously not ordinary personalities. Four arms and the club and the conch shell and the disc, not so prominent, and the fingers there, fingers usually holding the disc. And the lotus flower, these are the four objects and they change depending on the particular Vishnu form. So Shukadeva Goswami is here describing, because this is what Lord Brahma is seeing after his head is spinning, and then he comes back and he sees Krishna, first of all, standing there with his yogurt and chip rice and fruit in his hand, and then all of coward boys transform into these Vishnumurti. So now the demigods, it has been pointed out probably in several places that the demigods are actually jivas, just like you and I and every bug in this room, a jiva soul. But by pious activities, they have attained a post. In the third canto, Kapiladeva is saying, 20th chapter, if I remember the verse, Tapamahambasharanyaham. He says that out of fear of me, the wind blows, the sun is shining. I should find that because there's a very nice purport there. And even death goes about doing his business because of fear of me. So let me find that. I should read that. So that's third canto, chapter 25. For sure. Now the verse, I'm not so sure. I think it's 52. Let's try that. Nope, there's no 52, so maybe it's 42. Yeah. Madbayat vativato yam surya stapati madbayat varshatindurdayat yagnir mrityushcharati madbayat. It is because of my supremacy that the wind blows. Out of fear of me, the sun shines. Out of fear of me, and the Lord of the clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me. Fire burns out of fear of me, and death goes about taking its toll out of fear of me. So, the demigods, they're doing their business not necessarily out of pure love of Krishna, but because they're aware of Krishna's power, majesty, and just like if you get a responsible job in the government, you may be the minister of transportation or whatever, but you know that you're vulnerable to being fired, just like recently our head of the FBI, Comey, was fired by the president. So you may have a very big post in the government, but there's a big boss above you who can fire you at his will. So the demigods are kind of like in that mood. The prophet says here that how the demigods are doing their different business, but he says, but above all these demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the chief living entity. Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. The demigods are also ordinary living entities, but due to their faithfulness, their devotional service attitude, they have been promoted to such posts. So every one of us here can be or have already been, you know, in these posts, these various demigod posts. These different demigods are directors, such as Chandra, Varuna, and Vayu. They are called Adhikari Devata. The demigods are departmental heads. The government of the Supreme Lord consists not only of one planet or two or three. There are millions of planets and millions of universes. The Supreme Personality of God has a huge government, and He requires assistance. The demigods are considered His bodily limbs. So, Lord Brahma also falls in that category. Even though he's considered the chief of the demigods, Narad Muni even addresses him like that, Deva Deva Jagadatur Bhuta Bhavana Purvaja. Tadvajani Yadjyanam Atma Tattva Nidarshanam. This is Narad Muni speaking to Lord Brahma, and he's describing him not properly as being the head of the demigods, the self-born. In other words, it's not apparent that he has any mother and father. He just appears. So all of these accolades are true, but still, he's a jiva, just like we are. Now he's in the position of Brahma, and by all scriptural evidence, he knows who Krishna is. He's back in the... Let's see if I can find this verse. Back in the second canto, there's that chapter... Schedule incarnations with specific functions. So in that presentation, Lord Brahma shows clearly that he knows Krishna's position. He describes all the various incarnations that come and what their functions are. And then, let's see. Yeah, okay. So, he goes through this section where he's describing all the various incarnations, but then he explains how neither himself nor the other demigods really know who Krishna is. I'll just read a translation. Lord Brahma says, neither I nor all the sages born before you, speaking to Narada, know fully the omnipotent personality of Godhead. So what can others who are born after us know about Him? Even the first incarnation of the Lord, namely Shesha, has not been able to reach the limit of such knowledge, although he's describing the qualities of the Lord with 1,000 faces. So, and then the next verse is really the one that I wanted to refer to. Lord Brahma says, but anyone who is specifically favored by the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, due to unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord, can overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion and can understand the Lord. But those who are attached to this body, which is meant to be eaten at the end by dogs and jackals, cannot do so. So as long as we're in a bodily consciousness of life, we cannot understand Krishna. Because naturally we put our bodily situation above everything. Being an illusion, thinking the body to be the self, we will go to any lengths to protect the body. This awareness actually comes gradually. When the child is born, the first prominent consciousness is, everybody knows the five different stages, anamoy. Just feed me, feed me, feed me. They just know, I'm hungry, feed me, I'm hungry, feed me. That's it. That's the sum and substance of consciousness. Then, as the child matures, they get to this pranamoy, which is the stage of understanding quite clearly that I'm existing and that my existence is vulnerable, and therefore I want to protect myself. the classic fight or flight consciousness. Every situation I'm in, I have to decide, am I going to get out of this alive or not? I become fearful for my existence. So fight or flight. Either I'm going to have to fight you to protect myself, or I'm going to have to run away to protect myself. But then as we progress, manamoy, we start becoming philosophical. Who am I? Where did I come from? What is this all about? And if we're fortunate, as we all have been, we come in contact with this perfect knowledge given by a perfect representative of the personality of Godhead. And then vijnanamoy becomes prominent. We start realizing by applying the principles of bhakti, especially, we get realization of really who we are, Krishna's eternal servant, and the fact that there's another realm of existence that is permanent. When this part is destroyed, that part remains, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So we become more and more conscious of that, and we develop the desire to go back to home, back to Godhead. We realize that this is not our home, and we want to go back to home, back to Godhead, where everything is perfect. As these Vishnu Murtis are being described, everything is perfect. From top to bottom, everything is perfect and permanent. Here we have Tulsi. Yes, we have Tulsi. We have a very nice Tulsi house there, one of the secrets of New Dwarka. During the Prabhupada festival, Ramachandra Prabhu insisted that we all go together and visit Tulsi. So Ishana Mataji arranged, and myself, and Ramachandra, and Suvas, and who else was there? A few of the devotees, Radhanath Swami, and a few other devotees, we all went as a group to visit the Tulsi house. And very beautiful back there. Tulsi is very merciful. Extremely merciful. Krishna says, if you offer me a fruit, flower, leaf, some water, I'll accept. But Tulsi will love you just if you give her a little water with devotion. Forget about fruit and flowers and anything else. Just give her a little water every day. She's so merciful. And in this neighborhood, if you notice, there are some people who, they walk their dog or they go for a walk every day. Unconsciously, they're circumambulating Tulsi. They're going on, and they get so much benefit just from doing that. We know, Yani Kani Chapapani Vamahachari Kani Jan. So Tulsi is so merciful. But here, her manifestation in this world means her external body is temporary. We know she starts seedling, seed, and then a seedling, and then grows and grows, and then eventually Tulsi leaves that particular body, and we use the wood for neck beads or whatever. And she seems to be susceptible to attack from all kinds of gnarly little insects, aphids, and etc., etc. But in the spiritual world, as being described today, Tulsi is eternal, permanent, ever tender. These garlands that are offered to the Vishnumurti, ever tender buds of Tulsi. They never fade. They never, pass away. Everything there is permanent. The Vishnu forms are permanent. Their clothing and paraphernalia is permanent. Tulsi is permanent. All the residents are permanent. Everything there is permanent. We're also permanent, and that's why we can never be happy in this temporary atmosphere, no matter what we get. No matter how much attention we get, how much money we get, how much respect we get, how much property we have, or how much, or appear to have. Because everything here is illusion. We appear to have house or houses, car or cars, but actually we don't. Quite often what happens is we depart and all of those things remain. The houses, the cars, the clothes. So before death comes, it's generally advised, get rid of it. Don't leave it for the devotees to figure out what to do with it. Gradually, I'm kind of getting in that phase myself. I look around my little apartment, and it's such a little place, but there's so much stuff in it. So I'm thinking, get rid of it. Sell it and give the money to someone, to the leaders or someone, or donate it. Or there's a bin on Venice Boulevard, and you can put clothes and shoes, use clothes and shoes. Just get rid of it. Don't wait till after you leave and the devotees have to break into your apartment and figure out what to do with all this stuff. So this is our situation. If we're conscious, if we're not still in illusion, we understand our situation. We're permanent parts and parcels of Krishna, but we're in this temporary atmosphere and where we cannot find the satisfaction that we're looking for. No matter how hard we try, for how long we try. There's a famous band, they're still kicking. One of their famous songs was, "Time is on my side." Yes, it is. No, it's not. Externally, it isn't. If you think you're this material body, then time is definitely not on your side. Because every moment, it's deteriorating. Sometimes, very, very slowly that you can't even see, and sometimes abruptly something happens and you lose a limb or something. So time externally is not on our side. But it is on the side of the devotees. It's definitely on the side of the devotees. Because with every passing moment, every time we chant Hare Krishna, every time we bow down to the deities, every time we take prasadam, every moment we can Krishnaize that moment. And that moment becomes a permanent asset. You cannot buy back one moment of your life for all the money in the world. Chandra Kapandit reminds us, Prabhupada uses, remind us also several times by reciting that verse from Chandra Kapandit. But if that moment is spent in a Krishna conscious activity, here it's mentioned today, they're worshipping the Lord how? By hearing and chanting. So at the very least, we can do that. Prabhupada say, remind us several times, don't ever be idle. Engage in some practical devotional service, or sit down and read my books. Or if you can't do that, at least chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Everybody can do that. There is no excuse. So at every moment and every day, we can at least hear and chant the glories of the Lord. And Prabhupada has given us so much food for thought in his books. Try to remember and share with others. Like tonight there's Harinam. So we go out and share this good fortune with others. And in this way, we Krishnaize every moment, and time is on our side if we spend it properly. So we can stop there. Any questions? Comments? Yes, Radha Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much. Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada then translates the verse he takes the liberty of saying that the greatest pious activities is namely hearing and chanting. Where does it come from? Is it like, can you quote something?
He did. He quoted Prahlad, 7th canto. Shavanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasim Arsanam Vanam Dasyam Sakyam.
So it doesn't say that the greatest is hearing and chanting.
Pardon?
Prahlad doesn't say that the greatest of those 9 processes is hearing and chanting.
But it's the beginning, yes. In the very next verse, he says, Iti Pung Sarpata Vishnu Bhaktis Chen Navalakshana. Kriyata Bhagavat Chadya Tanman Yedita Uttamam. He says that these are the 9 processes of devotional service. You can engage in all of them, but even if you engage in just one of them, you're considered to be uttamam, the topmost of personalities. So, but it all begins with shravanam. If you don't hear about Krishna's glories, about our situation, this is sambandha again. If you don't go through the process of sambandha, then there is no question of abhideya and what to speak of prayojana, the ultimate goal. So everything begins with hearing. When you hear from the right source, then you can act properly. And this is true even materially. If you get a job, unless somebody shows you, which means you're hearing, how to do the thing, then what are you going to do? You're going to go around, you may figure this part out, but you may completely mess up another part. So it always begins with hearing. Everything begins. Hearing is the prime activity for the living entity, whether in material consciousness or spiritual consciousness. And if you hear, like we are, fortunate enough to hear from the right source, the right subject matter, then everything flows from that. So shrinvatam, everything, it begins with hearing. Shravanam, Shrinvatam Sakata Krishna, Punya Shravanam. Everything begins with hearing. If we hear properly, then we can engage in all other proper activities. Anything else? So you say Prabhupada took the liberty. Yes, and that's the liberty of a pure devotee. Just like if you look in today's verse, in the purport, he gives a translation to that verse about Krita Punya Punya. But the same verse, in the same canto earlier, he translates it differently. And so sometimes devotees, they don't realize that Prabhupada has the liberty of translating things that he wants. And sometimes we get hung up, like some devotees are hung up, they don't like the changes in the Gita because they got attached to reciting a verse a particular way. But you see, even Prabhupada himself doesn't translate it the same way. many, many Gita verses that Prabhupada refers to in the Bhagavatamrita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. It doesn't translate it the same way he did in the Bhagavad Gita. This is his privilege. He's a pure devotee of the Lord. He can translate things any way he wants. And that's why I said, our situation always begins with remembering that Prabhupada is a pure devotee. If we remember that and accept that, then everything flows from that. But if you think you have the right to question Prabhupada, then your road is very rocky. Jai. Ansarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai.